A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to the Election Day edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I am Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Now, I do not have my I voted sticker on because I have not yet voted. I'm going to be heading out to the polls just as soon as finish here, as a matter of fact. My wife did vote. And, you know, it's funny because I've talked to so many friends who have voted early this year. They've talked about the long lines that they've seen. Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air was saying he voted, I think it was Sunday before last, and he had to wait almost an hour there in Central Texas to cast his vote. We don't have that problem where I live. There are just darn enough people to have long lines, even for same-day voting. But my wife, mid-morning, was, I think, vote number 161 in our little small-town precinct there. So I think turnout is pretty good. I'm trying to think about how that relates to some of the past years in terms of, because we generally vote mid-morning. I think that is right up about where we've seen in 2020 and in 2016, maybe even a little bit higher. But of course, we don't know what the votes are going to be around the country. So on today's program, we're going to be talking about a couple of the 2A related cases to elections, rather, to watch. Obviously, the most important race, top of the ticket, right? Who's going to be in the White House for the next 4 years? And there's a really good chance we won't actually know who wins the presidential election tonight. If the polls are anywhere close to accurate, I mean, we are looking at razor thin margins in battleground states. When you factor in, you know, absentee votes and vote by mail, it could be several days before we actually see hard numbers in some of these swing states. So obviously we're paying very close attention to that. And we know what the stakes are, right? Kamala Harris, who has proclaimed herself to be a gun owner, said that she supports the Second Amendment, but also in favor of bans on so-called assault weapons, federal red flag laws, federal safe storage laws, federal universal background check laws, and that's just what she says she wants. Then, of course, there's all the stuff that they don't want to talk about, but the gun control lobby is certainly pushing for. You know, we've got the Joe Biden's executive action, putting together this interagency working group that's supposed to make recommendations about how to deal with emerging firearm threats, including the Glock switches and auto sears. That report is due out in December, and I suspect that we are going to see a recommendation about treating Glocks and other semi-automatic firearms as if they are machine guns. And that would be something that, of course, a Harris administration would be happy to implement. So there are some big, big things coming down the pike, not just, again, who's going to be appointing judges and maybe Supreme Court justices over the next 4 years, but if Harris and Tim Walz win election, we're going to continue to see these regulatory attacks on our right to keep and bear arms. So, again, we're paying very close attention to what's going on at the presidential level. Senate level, Republicans need to take 2 seats, hold on to every one of theirs in order to take control of the Senate. It is pretty much guaranteed that West Virginia Governor Jim Justice is going to win election to the U.S. Senate. There has not been a lot of polling there, but the few polls that have been done in West Virginia show Justice leading by more than 20 points. The other potential pickup, and I think I would say a likely pickup, is in Montana, where Democrat John Tester, fighting for his political life against Tim Sheehy. This is a state that has been trending red, but Tester has been stubbornly hanging on to his Senate seat. And again, he's one of those guys who portrays himself as a Second Amendment moderate, but then when it comes time to vote, he always votes with the gun control crowd. So that would be an opportunity not just to flip from from D to R, but to actually put a pro-Second Amendment senator in place. If those 2 seats flip, right, then Republicans have the majority, as long as, again, they don't lose any seats. I think Ohio is also going to be really close. The Senate race there, Bernie Moreno challenging Sherrod Brown. Again, a Democrat who's portrayed himself as a moderate. He's cut campaign ads showing him with Donald Trump this campaign cycle. That race, very, very close, within the margin of error. Wisconsin, Senate race between Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde, also within the margin of error. Out of Nevada, Jackie Rosen defending her seat. Sam Brown, the Republican challenger, just is polling right outside the margin of error. So if the polls, if the surveys that we've seen are anywhere close to accurate, that's probably going to remain in Democrat hands. But again, if the polls are underestimating support for Donald Trump and maybe support for Republicans, which has been the past, been the case in the past two election cycles, then maybe Nevada is a competitive seat. You've also got the Senate race in Pennsylvania, where Bob Casey, again, the so-called moderate Democrat, being challenged by Dave McCormick. That race appears to have tightened up in the last week or so of the campaign. So that could be another flip for Republicans. Again, you only need two, right, in order to stop things like the filibuster being nuked, the Supreme Court being packed. Now, you'd still need 60 votes to pass pro-Second Amendment legislation. And that might be a challenge. I don't think the Republicans are going to get to 60 seats. So then you'd have to try to attract some Democrat support for things like right to carry reciprocity and other pro-Second Amendment measures. But you would at least have a firewall to stop anti-gun justices from being appointed to the Supreme Court, anti-gun justices or judges from being appointed to the appellate courts around the country. And I think that is likely to happen. I'm not going to make any predictions for House races. There's just way too many of them, 435 seats up for grabs. But I will note that DDHQ, which is the sort of the election returns partner of Town Hall Media, I think they have given Republicans a 52% chance of keeping the House, about the same margin, I think 53% chance of taking the Senate. So according to them, it is possible. In fact, it is slightly more likely than not that we would see a Republican trifecta of Donald Trump winning the White House, Republicans taking the Senate and keeping a hold of the House. So we've got those Senate races to watch. Oh, there's another Senate race that I would bring up as well, beyond Montana, and that's in Tennessee. Now, I don't expect that Marsha Blackburn is going to lose reelection. In fact, I think this is a safe Republican seat. But the reason why it's worth talking about is Gloria Johnson, the Democratic candidate, was one of the Tennessee Three, right? She was one of those three lawmakers in the Tennessee State House who, after the Covenant School shooting, decided to lead this protest for gun control laws from the floor of the House itself. All three of those lawmakers were sanctioned by House leadership. Johnson was the only one of the three not to be expelled from the House, but she has used that celebritydom on the left, right, to launch the Senate campaign. And gun control was her primary issue, at least in the early days of the campaign. It has become apparent that she is not likely to win this election. She says that her focus is now on maybe trying to, you know, chisel away at the Republican supermajorities in the state legislature, which is a weird thing for a U.S. Senate candidate to do. So I'm keeping my eye on that race. The polling indicates Marsha Blackburn up by, you know, close to 20 points. And we'll see if those pre-election surveys prove accurate. We only have a couple of ballot measures going before voters around the country. In Colorado, there is a referendum that would enshrine a 6.5% excise tax on the sale of guns and ammunition, with the proceeds going towards all kinds of programs. But, you know, I think one of the big ones that they're talking about is domestic violence prevention. Now, I don't know about you. I'm in favor of preventing domestic violence, but I don't know why this is something that gun owners specifically have a role to play here. That is an issue to me of statewide concern. And if Democrats want to send more money to these programs, then I think every resident in Colorado should kick in a little bit. The state legislature has already passed this law, but it has to be approved by the voters. Given Colorado's, you know, pretty blue tint over the last, more than a decade now, I'd say that unfortunately, this referendum has a better than average chance of passing, but it can also be challenged in the courts once it takes effect. The other referendum that we're watching is in Memphis. Now, this is a non-binding referendum that basically it's designed to send a message, essentially, that Memphis residents want gun control and they want to undo Tennessee's firearms preemption law so they can pass things like a ban on so-called assault weapons, like a local red flag law. Again, Memphis is a blue dot in a pretty red state, and I expect that that referendum will pass, but I also don't anticipate that the referendum is going to have a big impact on lawmakers in Nashville. I don't think that we're going to see a successful push to undo firearms preemption next session, but I think that Democrats will use the results from tonight's referendum in Memphis to argue in favor of scrapping the state's firearm preemption law. I said I wasn't going to talk about any of the House races since there are 435 of them. I will mention one House race, and I'm curious as to how this one turns out. It's in Maine, the first congressional district, represented by Jared Golden, a Democrat, formerly A-rated Democrat, by the way, by the NRA. But last year, after the shootings in Lewiston, Maine, Jared Golden came out and said, you know what? I was wrong in opposing a ban on assault weapons, and I'm now in favor of banning these things, and I'll work with whoever it takes in Congress to ban these things. This is one of the few campaigns around the country, particularly House races, where gun control has emerged as perhaps the top issue, if not the top issue, certainly one of the top two or three issues. Austin Thorold, who's a state representative, former NASCAR driver, he's the Republican challenging Jared Golden. And, you know, again, Maine is one of these states where you've got a Democrat majority in the state house. You've got a Democrat governor. But it's not, they're not California Democrats, right? They're not San Francisco Democrats. They're Mainers. They are fairly conservative. And one of the reasons why Jared Golden has been elected as a Democrat in Maine is because he has been supportive of the Second Amendment. So I'm curious to see how his support for a gun ban impacts that race. This has been, again, in the pre-election surveys, pretty much neck and neck. I think it hasn't been a lot of polling. There was a poll about a month ago showing Golden down by about 3 points. I think the most recent poll had him up by a point. So this is one to watch. And again, this is an East Coast race. So hopefully we'll get some numbers and we'll have a pretty good idea of how that race is going to turn out fairly early on in the evening. And that could be a preview of how Democrats are going to fare, particularly in rural America, right? Kamala Harris, Democrats have been trying to do outreach to the rural vote. This is part of Kamala Harris's whole shtick about being a gun owner and supporting the Second Amendment, trying to cut into the margins in rural America. And if Golden is able to hang on to his seat, that may be a sign that Democrats have seen some success in taking away even a point or two, maybe 3 or 4 points from Republicans in rural America. Now, I say may simply because Jared Golden does have the advantage of incumbency, and that matters. It does. But again, I think that is another Second Amendment race to watch. We will be covering all of these races at Bearing Arms this evening. I will also be live blogging with the crew over at Hot Air tonight. I'm excited about that. So we will, and I'll be taking again sort of a Second Amendment focus on some of those races when I'm live blogging at Hot Air. You know, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I will tell you, I hope that you do get out and vote today. This is a very important day, not just in terms of what is at stake for our Second Amendment rights, but the fact that we get to cast a vote and a meaningful vote. Nobody knows how this election is going to turn out, right? At the presidential level, Senate races, so many of these are up for grabs. And your vote will matter. It will count. And I hope that you will take advantage of that fact and you will head to the polls. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the results, at least what we know of the results, with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. I'm looking forward to spending some time with Mark. But again, if you want to follow what's going on tonight, I would encourage you head over to hotair.com. We'll be live blogging there. And you can also check out bearingarms.com where we'll be updating some of those 2A-related races from around the country. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there, the case out of New Jersey. That's not a true recidivist report, but it is, again, one of these stories where it's just, what the heck is going on here? Here's the headline. Three teens, ages 14 and 13, sentenced in murder and robbery of a taxi driver in Franklin, New Jersey. So first of all, let's note that none of New Jersey's vaunted gun control laws actually stopped these 14 and 13-year-olds from illegally acquiring a firearm and using it to murder a taxi driver that they had apparently intended to rob, but ended up fatally shooting them. According to MyCentralJersey.com, the 14-year-old, and by the way, none of these convicts, because they're not just suspected anymore, they've been convicted of these crimes, but none of them have been named because they're juveniles, and they were adjudicated in juvenile court. So the 14-year-old, sentenced to 11 years on charges of murder, robbery, possession of a weapon for an unlawful purpose, and unlawful possession of a handgun. One of the 13-year-olds was sentenced to 8 years on charges of felony murder and robbery. And the other 13-year-old sentenced to 4 years for robbery. So he'll be out before he even turns 18. According to My Central Jersey, the juveniles could not be prosecuted as adults because they are under the age of 15. So that's just a blanket rule. Doesn't matter how heinous the crime. Doesn't matter if they were going to turn 15 the day after that crime was committed. If you are under the age of 15, you cannot be prosecuted as an adult in New Jersey. Doesn't matter how long or lengthy a criminal history you might have. And sadly, I mean, we can see 14-year-olds with rap sheets as long as my arm, but that doesn't matter. So the sentence is handed down by Superior Court Judge Christopher Edwards after the three were found guilty in connection with the killing of 57-year-old Kofi Addo. He had come to the United States in 2006 from Ghana with his two kids, worked as a bus driver by day, worked as a taxi driver by night. And it was about 10 p.m. on May 11th of last year when police in Franklin were called out on reports of a shooting. They found Addo shot in his cab, which had come to a stop after crashing into a parked vehicle. He was taken to a local trauma center where he was pronounced dead. The investigation found that Addo was going to pick up a fare when he was confronted by these suspects inside the cab. So basically, he picked him up, it sounds like. They tried to rob him, and then he was subsequently shot. Following the shooting, the juveniles fled from the area on foot, according to the prosecutor. The 56-year-old man, 57-year-old man, trying to better himself, trying to better his family, trying to provide for his kids, gunned down. In the, I won't say the prime of his life, but yeah, 57, that is the prime of his life. And because of New Jersey's juvenile justice system, because of how they treat juveniles, the most these individuals will do, 11 years behind bars. And I don't think, by the way, that that 11-year sentence is actually going to translate to 11 years. I don't know how it works in the juvenile justice system in New Jersey, but presumably you're going to get credit for time served, right? You're going to get good time credit because the role or the goal, rather, of the juvenile justice system is not incarceration. It is rehabilitation. So there is every prospect that this 14-year-old is going to be out well before his 25th birthday, that this 13-year-old who was sentenced to 8 years will be out well before they turn 21. And, of course, the other 13-year-old received the 4-year sentence for robbery. Well, he's guaranteed to be out before he turns 18, but he might be out in time to get his driver's license because the state of New Jersey gets really tough on those who would try to exercise their Second Amendment rights. But if you're a juvenile who illegally possesses a firearm in the commission of a violent crime, as long as you're not yet 15 years old, you're going to walk away with what amounts to a slap on the wrist. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from Alabaster, Alabama. We don't have a lot of details about this, but the headline, Alabaster police believe deadly shooting at gas station was an act of self-defense. Again, not a lot of information, but according to WBRC, the Alabaster Police Department says they responded to a call of a shooting on Saturday night. When officers arrived at this gas station, they found two people at the scene, one of them suffering from gunshot wounds. Sounds like the other may have been the gun owner. Alabaster Fire Department arrived to provide emergency medical treatment to the victim, but the victim died at the scene due to his injuries. Alabaster police say the second person at the scene was detained as part of the investigation, but after detectives reviewed physical evidence, witness statements, and video evidence, they say that they believe that the shooting was an act of self-defense. Now, this case will still be presented to a grand jury, but no arrest made because, again, the individual who fired those shots, according to law enforcement, did so in justifiable fear of his life. So if we do get more information about this case, we will certainly bring it to you. But again, an apparent act of a self-defense at this gas station in Alabaster, Alabama. And finally today, our good deed of the day in Cedar City, Utah, where some off-duty EMTs were able to save the day and save a man's life. It was about a week ago, 77-year-old Marco Pesantes was loading up his groceries after heading to the grocery store when he suddenly passed out, cardiac arrest. Anna Turpin, who is Pesantes' daughter, said there were a couple of EMTs that were off duty who were actually walking out of the store at the time, and they saw what happened. And they were able to provide CPR right away and effectively, and that's why he's with us today. It's amazing. Pesantes has only lived in Cedar City, Utah for about 2.5 years. He moved his family from Las Vegas, working at a local Chili's at age 77, still working to provide for his family. Just cashed his check after shopping at the local grocery store there. Workers at that grocery store said they didn't expect to see him make it. And they were surprised to learn that he had recovered and was going home. Turpin, Pesantes' daughter, said that she is eternally thankful for the two EMTs. She said, I mean, they saved my dad's life. And because of them, he's still here. The doctor, the cardiologist, told us that he had not received CPR away right away like he did, he probably would have suffered brain damage from having no oxygen to his brain. He spent about a week in the hospital, was airlifted to a hospital, but Pesantes was released yesterday afternoon. His daughter says the doctors are very shocked because of how things happened, his fast recovery. Now, she and the family are trying to raise some money to help pay for the medical bills, which are going to be pretty severe after spending a week in the hospital. But again, alive and well, or at least alive and on the road to recovery, there in Cedar City, Utah. Marco Pesantes. All thanks to the EMTs who are in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Again, I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I am going to put this show to bed. Then I'm going to go cast my vote. And I will see you back here tomorrow with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio talking about what we know from the 2024 election. I also remind you, again, check out BearingArms.com throughout the evening. Check out all of our partners as well, HotAir.com, where I'll be live blogging, TownHall.com, Red State, Twitchy, PJ Media. You'll have full election coverage on all of those websites throughout the evening. We also have a fantastic sale going on right now for our VIP Platinum membership, 60% off your VIP Platinum membership. You get all of the benefits of being a VIP member, a VIP Gold member. You'll also get additional benefits like access to Town Hall TV, a permanent discount in the Town Hall merch store, which is constantly being updated, by the way, with the new merchandise, and the ability to directly contact your favorite Town Hall media writers. So again, use the promo code FIGHT and get 60% off of your VIP Platinum membership. Not only will you be getting a great deal, but you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we do here at Bearing Arms, and for that we are eternally grateful. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe, be free.